Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Freaky Darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Phil, and Giddy, Kerouac, and Morrison, you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join us Friday with Break On Through with Pam. Sit in with Babla and Faziana on Saturday as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. And every other Sunday, join Stelina and Arcana as they delve into the depths of darkness. These shows are designed so that you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host, Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Evening, Pam.
Hello, Rex. I don't know about you, but I am ready to take a walk on the wild side. And how are you doing tonight?
All right. Not much.
Very cool. Same old, same old. Ah, let's see here. Yeah, pretty much for me too. I attempted to make homemade pierogies for the first time in my life. So, I don't think I did very well with the dough, though, but, you know, it wasn't horrible. It just wasn't as good as I expected it to be. But the fillings were good. The filling, me and Nessa came up with about 10 different fillings to try. And I made, like, way too many mashed potatoes. So that's what we had for dinner tonight was leftover mashed potatoes. all in all, we've got some nice weather. I've been going for more walks lately, so that's been nice to get out, you know. And, good stuff, good stuff. And what else? Oh, not much. Well, we got a great lineup of poetry tonight, as always. I got a couple of carryovers from another show, I think last week's show. We have our main topic, which is poetry inspired by quotes of, what's his name again? Oh, Karl Marx. Yes. And then I got, just in case, because we didn't have quite enough rights, I thought I grabbed some other carryovers that were for Break On Through this Friday, but I just moved them over to here in case they were needed. But you know, it doesn't surprise me. I have to laugh. But it doesn't surprise me that my dough for pierogies didn't turn out that great because, well, first of all, it's my first time, and second of all, I suck at anything that has, I can't make pies. I never make pies. I always make crumbs or crisps or anything that does not involve, any dessert that does not involve pie crust, I will make.
Oh, maybe you needed more flour.
You think so? It could be. Could be. I don't know. I'm never quite sure. I may have to try to make a pie sometime, tell you what I do exactly when I make it, and you can tell me whether or not I need more flour or more shortening. Graham cracker crust.
Not the pie, the pierogies. Maybe you needed more flour.
Yeah. Well, I was actually pretty generous with my flour, but you know what? Actually, I think I know what the problem was. I probably should have used more flour. Well, what happened is this. Okay, so you'll laugh at this. So I had written down, or maybe you'll laugh. I had to laugh at myself. I wrote down my shopping list of everything I needed. And I happened, then I mailed my shopping list out with an application for an apartment. So these people are going to get the application for my apartment, for the apartment that I'm trying to get, along with my shopping list. And so I didn't pick up the sour cream the recipe called for. So I was like, okay, I don't have sour cream. I'm going to create buttermilk with white vinegar and milk, which is how I always create buttermilk, you know, when I am making buttermilk pancakes. But instead I'll use less milk than it calls for, or, you know, like it was like for a cup of sour cream. So I did a half a cup of buttermilk. It was still a little bit watery, so I added more flour, and it got to a consistency that I felt was right. The other two things I think, but anyways, I'm probably boring you with my pierogi talk, but, you know, is I think I made the pierogies a little too big, and, you know, because size does matter, and, you know, I do think I will have to test out the whole flour thing, plus that, and make sure I have sour cream next time, but... Anyways, enough about my cooking shenanigans. How about you, Rex? Make anything good lately?
Nope.
Well, if you do, you'll have to let me know. All right.
Let's get into what we got.
All right. Sounds good. Sounds good. All right. Well, grabbing the first poem. All right. Up first, we have Fractal of Veins by Unexpected Bill. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
Fractal of Veins. Unexpected Bones. A throbbing sensation, pulses of Lifei is held within those fractal veins. Veins that bring oxygen allow us to live. Okay, now I get it. Maybe I should have got it. Let me start over. A throbbing sensation, pulses of life. Life is held within those fractal veins. Veins that bring oxygen allow us to live. Live the day long. Live the day tomorrow. Tomorrow comes again. So does the pain. Pain of a junkie facing death would be welcomed. Unlike today is for fixing and remaining broken like a record, repeating one verse of sadness. Record keeps playing with his mind, a snake-bitten soul that is empty after fractal drilling not to withdraw, but to deposit the relief. Relieving the Jones again tomorrow. Today isn't gone away like yesterday. One in the same veins, same needles, same patience. Patience is overtaken. Pulse rate slows, slowly, slowest, arrested like a criminal. Sentenced to life. Life is over. Now there's no pain. Pain in relief is given to the fractal of veins. And poem. Nice.
Oh, awesome. Read there, Rex. That was quite the trip there. The way he spaced the words and the way you read it, it made me think back to when my oldest kid had to get a scan of the brain, and so they had to sedate her, and she was like 3 years old, and when she came out of the sedation, she was talking exactly like that, like everything was in slow motion. It was like watching a drunk toddler. But anyways, I really like this. This was actually, I had forgotten that this was one that Bill gave us to read on the last week's After Midnight, Keith Richards. It wasn't specifically inspired by one of the prompts. But I had approached him and asked if he wanted to share something that he thought fit with the show. And he this one to me, and I thought it was a great fit. I mean, he really takes us by having the spacing between certain words. It's great wordplay. It gives us the effect of listening to someone who's really going under the influence of the drugs. I really like how some of the words, when they're split, just almost create a sense of a new word, you know, like soul, and I mean, I like that where he chooses to separate them. So it's almost as if your mind could almost see it as a completely new word. I really like playing with my mind, a snake-bitten soul that is empty after fractal drilling, not to withdraw, but to deposit the relief. I really think he's done a great job of getting into the mind of a junkie, of someone who's looking for that fix, looking for that a sense of relief and that numbness that comes with the dose of the drugs. This actually kind of reminds me of a poem I wrote where I did the separating thing, but I didn't do it in order to separate certain words. I did it so that it would create like a lightning, almost like pattern down the center of the poem. But anyways, I really think this is a great share by Unexpected Bill, and I'm so glad that he shared it with us. I really think it fit well with the whole Keith Richard prompts that you had last week, Rex, and I thought this was very well done.
Yep. Thank you very much. I guess after getting in the first two lines, I went back and started again from top. I should have kept on that roll of running where it was. Life-y is held within those cracked out they ends. I kept that raw. I think that was the intention. Besides the point of where he went with the notation to the use of a junkie and a needle, but it can also hit that note of as you're filling your veins and you're starting to get that nodding effect, you might actually start yammering in these little bits, not fully, but little tidbits here and there as the word comes, and then your mind has to re-click to offer up the back end of the word as you kind of disturb yourself and, all right, what was that? Oh, that's the word. And it could, plus it offers up that notation of life-y, veins, live V, pa in, DF, or toe day. So he hits on a number of notes to play. It's more of a mind game than a puzzle. What is he really offering up as a notation to the real fractal of the veins itself? Is it within the singular pulse that bites on the tip of your tongue? Or is he just having a bit of fun? Coming back your way.
Oh, okay. Back to me, huh? All right. All right. Yep. Give me just a moment.
Oh. couch. Battle axe. Go on. Oh.
Godo.
Oh, I see how it is. Calling me a battle axe, huh?
The dog. She stepped on my foot.
How is the old battle axe doing?
Outside, waiting for me to come out, and I said, go to hell. You go play. I'm going to sit here.
All right. Let me, sorry, I had to grab the next poem. And then my Kindle Fire decided to be a pain in the butt, so. All right. Now let me get back to where I need to be. Oh, come on. Seriously. All right. Finally. Up next we have Godot by Keith Calethorpe. And it goes like this. I find myself arrested on an edge where all that went before is clearly done and all that lies ahead is mine to make or add unto the list of lost and gone. The world will little note, much less record my antics any more than in the past. I am a living product of free will, a monument to being chosen last. There is a balm in cold obscurity, a status to be envied in the end, degrees of freedom ample to the task, and nothing in my actions to defend. So I shall rest a while upon this crux, while others contemplate my proper path. Perhaps I'll eat a fig and roll my cuffs, enticing them to crush and grape the grapes of wrath. For bird-like time was ever on my side, her winged path advancing bestly plan, but I have lagged behind and spoiled the spoils her bounty had delivered to my hands. So let us sally forth upon our quest for that which we will recognize on sight. To wander wide in wonder is a feat best fetted by the lady and her knight. But I digress, as is my solemn rite, and will again, if given half a chance, the music of the spheres dictates the beat, and I am hard committed to the dance. The tune will warp and turn the tide of time, exposing wonders novel to the eye, that rapidly become the commonplace and join the ranks of refuse by and by. So here I sit and play, sit a player with no play, awaiting orders that will never come, pretending in the breach to seize the day, but biding time from sun to dying sun. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I like the roll and flow in this one. And that picture is definitely a note, and the voice that went with it came with the picture is quite dandy. I find myself arrested on an edge where all that went before is clearly done, and all that lies ahead is mine to make or add unto the list of lost and gone. Great opening thought there. All the possibilities are ahead of you, and if you don't take the note to making the most possibilities, well, then you're on the back end of things, which he did clearly hit on with the back here. So here I sit a player with no play, awaiting orders that will never come, pretending as a branch to seize the day, but biding time from sun to dying sun. Someone who's a follower, not a leader, rather have somebody giving them the news of what they are supposed to be doing day to day or during the course of a few weeks, months, even a year, and finding that it's easier just pretending to be the player but actually not accomplishing nothing outside of what's already there to begin with. No freedom to, no will to offer up freedom, a chance to evolve. So it's either content on that back end or lodged into the angle of life that, hey, I'm just a cog and I can't do nothing about it or will not do anything about it. So I'll be content within that machine as the cog itself. All right, what about you?
I like that. Great thoughts shared there. And I really appreciate Keith sharing this one with us. He was another one that I approached and asked if he'd like to share a write that he felt fit with last week's show. And I thought this one was quite clever and quite fun. I have to smile at his AN, which says Auto Rank hates this poem. He is not alone. Auto Rank hates many of my poems. But I like the wordplay in this, the idea of someone who just, I don't know, has a very laid back attitude. I really liked and related to, but I digress, as is my solemn rite. And then, of course, to spell rite like a ritual, R-I-T-E rather than R-I-G-H-T. Like I really like his wordplay in that he deliberately chose to have words that sound the same but have different meanings. And will again if given half a chance. The music of the spheres dictates the beat, and I am hard committed to the dance. You know what? I can relate to that. I am a person who will digress if given half a chance. I like the humor in this. I like what he has to say about being an individual. I also really liked where he spoke about up near the top where it said, the world will little note, much less record my antics any more than in the past. I am a living product of free will, a monument to be chosen last. You know, it seems like so oftentimes people who don't follow the crowd, who oftentimes don't necessarily get noticed in history because history wants to record what was popular with the crowd. So excellent write by Keith Palethorpe and very well done.
All right. What's next?
Well, we are now done with our two carryovers. So we will be going into the Karl Marx-inspired write. And we will start that with I Am by Mystic Muse. And go ahead, Rex.
I Am by Mystic Muse. I am ice and I am fire, shades of hatred and desire. I am water, I am wind, the beginning and the end. I am earth and I am sky, brutal truth and soothing lie, apathy and helping hand, universe and grain of sand. I am free will and I am fate, I am enemy and mate. I am life and I am death, final gasp and baby's breath. I am nothing, I am all, morning sun and dark nightfall. I am shore and I am sea, I am what I dream to be. End poem. All right, what you got?
I don't know. I do know what I got. First of all, as always, great read and an excellent write there by Dave. The rhyme and flow just spot on, great imagery. Who's that guy that sings the song that goes something like, I am fire and I am rain or something like that? He's like a folk song singer.
Oh, James,
Oh, yes.
I can't remember his name. James Taylor.
Okay, yes. It made me think of that song. I liked that, and, I like when poetry makes me think of a song, but he wrote to the quote, I am nothing, but I must be everything. And I like how all the way through there's a consistency with the theme, with the repetition of I am, and yet there's just enough of a change to see this various elements within a person. And I feel like this can be taken metaphorically, like you represent the elements of a person. And I also think that it can be almost a personification of life itself, almost like there's a kind of a spiritual sense to this rite. And how really one of the most important things, I always like to talk about balance, because I really believe one of the most important things in life is to find that sense of balance. And I think that with anything, and I think Dave finds that in this poem, and especially with I am earth and I am sky, brutal truth and soothing lie, apathy and helping hand, universe and grain of sand. And then I'm free will and I am fate. I am enemy and mate. I am life and I am death. Final gasp and baby's breath. I think final gasp and baby's breath is really particularly hard hitting, because it speaks on that idea of, you know, that the old life that goes out and the new life that comes in, but also that baby's breath is a type of flower used in bouquets. So you could almost see it as being a mention of the funeral bouquet. So I don't think he necessarily meant it that way, but that's kind of what it makes me think of, is there's a duality in using that choice of phrasing. So anyways, wonderful write by Dave as always, and very well done.
Nice. I'm going to go with it. It's the paradox in the separation of, but claiming the two as a singularity, because they are so far set aside. They're opposite ends. I am ice. I am fire. I am earth. I am sky. I am free will, and I am state. People look at people who sit there and roll in with free will don't believe in fate. I am enemy and mate. You can be as long those you can be that as long as you sit on the same side with the one you want to be mate with. Otherwise, you hold them as an enemy. And the back end, I am what I dream to be. That kind of singes heavily on what we got roiling around in today's society. I am what I choose to be. I am what I dream. Well, good. You might wear a dress, claim to be a lesbian woman, but that ain't true. And the idea of trying to be opposite of what you are is the contrast. I am ice. I am fire. They are opposites. One does not work with the other. That's the paradox. If you want to be fire, yeah, but you got to stay away from the ice and water because it puts your ass out. Brutal truth and a soothing lie. Funny thing about that, brutal truth will always expose the soothing lie. Apathy and helping hand. Those who are apathetic never offer a helping hand. You can't be one and the same within that valued equation, because the opposites on that realm are not attractable. They deny each other because of the consequence of what they offer itself. And the final gasp and baby's breath, well, that kind of hits a note of life and death, the beginning and the end, alpha and omega. But the final gasp and baby's breath kind of offer up a little deeper meaning in that. You might be, I don't know. And I am nothing and I am all. Again, paradox. They don't work in the same realm. So I think he's poking a bit of fun at Marx.
Great observations there, Rex. And yeah, I can definitely see that. There is the whole thought of paradoxes there. Very cool. All right. And Up next, we have Free Yourself from the Man's Greedy Chains by Jenny the Deep. And it goes like this. Born to live, then we live to die. There has to be more than this to life. Working for the man while he gets his kicks. Shackled in his gold chains, nauseatingly sick. If you really insist, then by all means, stay locked up behind corporate lemmings. Tired tyrants unite, it's time to break away. We must not let the rich lead us astray. Tied down in these chains too damn long. Living life like this just feels so damn wrong. Wasting away, squandering expectations, wishing for adventures instead of doing them. Stop hopping, stop hoping and praying, start taking action. Free yourself, give the man no satisfaction. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And this, well, there's a nice easy roll with the thought in this, but it also hits on that that idea of walking away from those entities that do not offer you or adhere to your own values. Hey, if you're working for a company that's playing games, you know what? Dump them. Don't buy their products anymore. That's where the real change comes with places like this, because you used to be, when we had manufacturing here back in the day, it was a world of difference. You used to put your money in a bank, the bank would pay you interest on the money. Why? Because they use it. You put money in the bank today, you don't get shit. You put time into great companies today, you get squats on the back end of things. It used to be you'd go and work for a company 20, 30, 40 years, and you'd get your worth out of it as they got their worth out of it from you. There are no more back ends where you take care of the people, take care of the company. Now the company wants to take care of itself and screw the people. So with this idea, hey, if you don't like what you're doing, you don't need to be there. Find something that you do enjoy doing, and you won't have to work another day in your life.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right,
great comment. Yeah, I really like this. You know, it's a great stick-it-to-the-man poem, strong, hard-hitting line. You know, it's makes me think of this quote I read, or this, it was a meme or a joke, something like that, but it kind of had a serious context to it. And it's like this guy complimenting his boss on his fancy new car. And the boss is like, if you work hard and, you know, really buckle down and do your best, then I'll get a second one just like it next year. And it made me think of this poem, made me think of that, because it's that whole idea of working for your ass off for other people's benefits rather than your own. And I do like what you had to say, Rex, about, and I have to agree about, you know, how it's important to be doing something you love. You know, the unfortunate catch-22 is that when you talk about, you know, doing things like, you know, going on vacations and stuff like that, well, unfortunately, stuff like that takes money, and unfortunately, most of the time, you know, money takes hard work. I really like her imagery in this. I like the underlying message of, you know, stop doing what benefits other people and do what benefits yourself, what makes you happy. I also like her use of the phrase "the man" in quotation marks, working for the man while he gets the kicks, shackled in his gold chains, nauseatingly sick. And then, you know, just being fed up with that second to last stanza really speaks on the idea of being, you know, just tired of everything. And I like the phrase wasting away, squandering experiences. because I think, you know, having those opportunities to have experiences besides killing yourself at something you hate, it's so important to, you know, like nourish and feed the spirit. Wonderful, right, and very well done.
All right, where are we going next?
All right. And up next we have, oh, sorry, wrong poem. That's the same one. I forgot to grab the next one. Let me do that. All right. So nope, not that one either. All right, this one. All right. Up next we have To Feel Nothing by Time Teller.
To Feel Nothing by Time Teller. The lie is the illusion that all can have aspiration. We can't all sit at one end of the seesaw. Soon, nothing will be left to sell, and nothing will be the most expensive commodity ever. To feel nothing will become vogue. To see nothing, hear nothing, ignore the moaning masses of good-for-nothing, withered, watched, overpopulated, useless, food-guzzling gannets, for they will bring us all down. Nothing will sell faster than opium, filling our hearts with fairy make-believes in order to avoid reality. And the dogs will bark kindness into empty food dishes as the cat flaps of opportunity dice and slice the brave who attempt entry. Only exits will be allowed, reducing the burden of problem-solving algorithms that select using a morality of its own. The more we have, the less we want to do, and the latest report suggests the air is cleaner and the butterfly has spread and returned to its original coal flag and steel landscapes. What do you think?
Great read there, Rex. I like this one. It's a real, like, stand on the soapbox poem. And I think it's a good reminder of what I was talking about earlier, of that sense of balance. Especially in the beginning lines, the lie is the illusion that all can have aspiration. We can't all sit at one end of the seesaw. Soon nothing will be left to sell and nothing will be the most expensive commodity ever. I like how he speaks on the idea of how the idea of marketing and the idea of how when it comes to buying and selling and creating products, that every person has their purpose. And it's almost like makes me think of the whole idea of where they say, too many cooks in the kitchen spoil the broth. It makes me think of this saying. I like that he was, inspired by multiple prompts, and I really like this all the way through, and the a message of, you know, that not everybody can hold the same position, because it doesn't allow the whole process of business and corporations to run smoothly. And I like particularly, and the dogs will bark kindness into empty food dishes as they cap flaps of opportunity, dice and slice the brave who attempt entry. That really speaks to me. It was a great metaphor for greed and how people will try to act like they have your best interest in mind, when really what they have in mind is their own best interest. So great write and very well done.
Well, I think that middle section is the bite that holds the key. Nothing will sell faster than opium, filling our hearts with fairy make-believes in order to avoid reality. There's a double dip in that. The idea that you can be sold the notion that you can have anything and everything you want, but we will pull the rug out from under your feet. And it also hits on the idea of introducing known quantities of drugs that are known to be indicative of being overused and making junkies out of people as a way to escape reality, but also as a way to feed into the market because you need it. So you will go out and purchase it, and regardless of everything else. It's a nasty cycle which feeds on itself even after death. It really doesn't matter because they don't care. They just want that next hit. And that the bite in this walks in that note of Marxism where the state has to rule and run everything, but that doesn't work either. I mean, you look at it. Every country that's initialized Marxism, communism, socialism, whatever else, they've all fallen miserably on their faces, while the people who sat at the top raped the system clean of everything. They always had the best of everything. They always got the best food. They had at least two houses, one in the city, one in the country. They took their great grand vacations, had their yachts, their big cars and everything else. And the workers, those who were supposed to benefit, never, ever benefited. Except to go hungry, that is. I like that dog. I like that. And the dogs who bought kindness and empty food dishes as the notation of we, the dogs, because that's how we get treated as dogs. We're thought of as dogs. They don't give a shit about us. And the thought of only exits will be allowed, the exit being, hey, 6 feet under, next one in, reducing the burden of problem-solving algorithms that select using a morality of all of its own. It's a nice thought there of the machine learning that we got now, AI, being programmed by these type of woke imbeciles, which will make sure the next generation gets all of those within this next generation, the coming generations, will be left out in the cold as well. And that back end, the more we have, the less we want to do. That is a quiet note to having no real reason to actually live except to exist. If you don't have something to do, what's the point? And the more you have, the less you want to do. And it's Nigerian that, hey, relaxation is relaxation. People need a function. They need to keep busy. They need to do things. Otherwise, that you walk into a sedentary mess, not just with the body itself, but mentally. All right. What you got next?
All right. Well, up next we have Adventurous Roads by Betty Page. Create a new path, dancing high along new roads. Be adventurous. Let none control you. Invent, create. Be yourself, uniquely gifted. Build up your empires. Tell no one of your plan. Enchant mystical. Create pure magic, dark blended with brightest light. Be visionary. Pursue true greatness, achieving your own success. Ignore naysayers. Create a new path, dancing high along new roads. Be adventurous. Let none control you. Invent, create, be yourself. Uniquely gift hires. Tell no one of all your plans. Enchant mystical. Create pure magic, dark blended with brightest light. Be visionaries. End poem.
Great, Tim. Thank you very much. Biden is, Betty's offering up that note to don't sell out. Because once you sell out, you are no longer your own. You're just given into the idea of what perpetuates the myth of those and how they treat others. You just become part of the mix. So the idea is not selling out. If you create your empire, fine. But don't give it up. Don't give it up to the point where you lose control and all of a sudden, hey, your board of directors just kicked you out. You're no longer relevant, even though it's your company. So never sell out. Don't give anybody the power to determine where you are going, where your vision is going, where the path to the invention or anything else is going. If you have to keep running it yourself because you can't find the necessary right-minded personnel, then do it until you do find the right personnel. All right. What about you?
Oh, absolutely. You know, this is a wonderful, right? Great 575 line, strong imagery. Definitely a great write on being true to yourself. And I like how this speaks on an emotional level and a practical level. Like it speaks on the emotional level of being a person that, you know, has their own magic, knows their gifts, embraces their unique qualities. And yet it has very practical lines, like especially it says, build up your empires. Tell no one of all your plans. Now, that tell no one of all your plans, it was very good, great words of wisdom in this rite because, you know, you don't know who you can trust. You know, sometimes, you know, you can't take that chance that it's going to all just be stolen, like, right out from under you because you shared with the wrong person. But I like that mainly this is a message of being true to yourself, of realizing that you are, as this single phrase says, uniquely gifted. You are a magical person, uniquely gifted, and you have the opportunity to be a true visionary. You just have to be wary of who you trust with your plans. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
What are we getting into now?
All right. Well, up next we have Long Live the Brainwashed Millions, Election 1973 in Hungary by Eva Pahavi. And go ahead, Rex.
Long Live the Brainwashed Millions, Elections 1973 in Hungary by Eva Pahavi. Tavadis Kadar, Father of our nation, you provided me the right to declare my intention on the day of election. My very, very first time in life, thrilled I am, bearing the task, honorable weight. Long live our communist country and the unbreakable Soviet-Hungarian friendship. 6 o'clock in the morning of the Red Letter Sunday, when electoral district volunteers bring the voting urn to my door so nobody's allowed to sleep when our people's futures are at stake. For our ideologically self-conscious socialist nation bears not procrastination while the rocking capitalisms among against our homeland from beyond the Iron Curtain. After quick signing, I can hold in my hand the very first time in life the pre-printed ballot, along with a snow-white envelope. Not too hard to ask, no empty rubrics, circles, or squares drawn on the fancy sheet of paper, lest voters commit a fault, no pen is needed, lest one mistake their own whim to our great governor's will, lest they should have been jailed next to the other political prisoners. Into the envelope I slip the voting form in awe, as millions do at the same time countrywide. We save our Marxist-Leninist homeland from the capitalist threat for the next 5 years. There cannot be any hitch with cast ballots because there's only one single name printed on the red starry voting papers, and it's your name, Comrade Kadar, our leader, well-doer of our nation. Long live the brainwashed millions, at least up to next elections. And a poem.
great read there, Rex. You know, I'm really glad that Eva was inspired, and I think that this was a perfect fit for the prompt she chose to write to. The oppressed are allowed once every few years to decide which particular representatives of the oppressing class are to represent and repress them. And I was looking also at her AM when I was reading this earlier. She says, first time I cast a vote in 1973, and sincerely, we were so blind here. The election's absurdity became visible just decades later after regime change. And sincerely, we are in a very similar pit currently, and our comfortable blindness works so well again. And that is so true. That, man, this is a right that has a lot of bite to it. And I like that she takes us back in history, and yet at the same time, it sadly relates to much of current times. And so much, you know, we do have a lot of rights and freedoms, and, you know, but at the same time, there's so many places in the world, you know, and even here in the United States where, you know, the political system is just not where it should be. But, you know, I like that she brings us to a point in history for a country. And the thing with Hungary is, if I remember right from what I read about it, it's changed names and occupations so oftentimes, and, you know, has struggled with various political systems. You know, that it's an absolutely fascinating and intriguing country to read about, and you can see the struggles the people have gone through as Hungarian Empire has changed from hand to hand. I like that her attention to details in this. 6 o'clock in the morning of the red letter Sunday, when each electoral district volunteers bring the voting urn to my door sill, nobody's allowed to sleep when our people's future's at stake. And it's a really raw look at how people were given the illusion that they had some sort of say and some sort of control, when all along there was only one name on the ballot. Great use of the word comrade, you know, and a real sardonic tone to it. And it's your name. There can not be any hitch with cast ballots, because there's only one single name printed on the red starry voting papers, and it's your name, Comrade Kadar, our leader, well-doer of our nation. Long live the brainwashed millions, at least up to next election. And I really feel like that closing line really fits well with the current times, too. So very well done.
Nice. Thank you, ma'am. This is reality of what was then. The funny thing is, when you are rolling out such as you are the red letter day, and you've only got the singular notation on it, and you've got the propaganda machine in the media rolling out the red carpet, so to speak. This is good. This is good. We're fighting against the imperialists of the West. And the funny thing is, they're kind of sitting in the same boat right now, because you've got they've got the European Union putting the full weight of their non-elected essence on Hungary right now, because Hungary is looking to do something a bit different, not follow the world directives that come out of Brussels, who aren't actually elected to begin with. They're just people assuming the right to tell all of Europe what to do, when to do it, how to do it. And you have to pay us for that luxury, which is an odd construction to begin with. But it's time. As bad as this was, she offers it up as a note of it's kind of a sarcastic, drippy tone to it as well, because of the fact that back then, voting for the first time, you didn't know. All of a sudden, yeah, when you get a little glimpse past the veil that has always been over the eyes of the people, and you get a glimpse beyond that, and, oh, wow, there are better ways to do this thing. We've just been blind to it because we've been indoctrinated into a singularity, and that's how it works. You keep the people on task, you keep them to a single directive in voice and a single directive in how we, as this particular country, do things, and you don't give them any options. Nicely done, Ava. Thank you very much.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment there, Rex. All right. Going to go grab the next one. All right. And up next, we have History by Randy G. And it goes like this. Beware the extreme left is now on the move, demanding things that only they will approve. And their stock in trade is to rewrite history to suit their needs and create vague mystery, tearing down statues of icons they don't like, emulating Nazis they designed their own Reich, replacing them with something more inclusive, denying history they continue to be intrusive. Then they senselessly demand reparations, payments now for sins of past generations. No understanding of history and its players. Fact is, it's filled with many interwoven layers. Karl Marx knew that deception is worth gold. A people without history are easily controlled. Most effective when started early in schools, aided by a fact parents are lazy or just fools. Not knowing history leaves you susceptible to those which you should be most skeptical. History should not just arbitrarily be changed when it is allowed. It's that nation's shame. End poem.
Great reading. Thank you very much. Well, this is there's reality here. For those of you who want to understand how it works, just take a peek at this. This is easy to read, easy to ingest, and easy to follow. It is systematic and how it works. Let's see, what is it? You take away history, you change it, then you've got nothing that you've got no foundation to build on. You delete everything from a country's notations, where how it got you there to begin with. All of a sudden, it's gone. You've got no foundation, no continuity within the public itself. Indoctrination, you start that in school early. Now, just take a look at the bloody colleges today. Indoctrination centers. And that thought with emulating Nazis, nice touch with that. There's a thing going around, it's been out for a long, long while. That note to the New World Order isn't actually a New World Order. It's the Nazi World Order, the rise of the Fourth Reich. And he hits on that. They designed their own Reich. Inclusivity, the fact that you've got now a movie out about Cleopatra and she's black, and you just themselves, Egypt is raising hell over that because it's not factual, and they're running it as a docudrama. As in, hey, this is reality. Cleopatra was black. No, she wasn't. She was Macedonian Greek and born in bloody Egypt. She wasn't black. And the reparations in California wants to offer up a few $100 million in reparations to people who were never slaves, from people who were never owned or bought slaves, and for what?
Mm-hmm.
There are more slaves across the world today now than there ever was back then. And the funny thing is, Africa was the one selling their slaves to Denmark, Spain, Italy. They didn't go inland. They brought them to the coast and sold them. And not to mention, slavery has been around as long as we have been out of the into larger cities and the propagation of empire building. Everybody's done it. And it's like I said, it's still going on today. You've got trade slaves. You've got sex slaves. You've got child slaves. You've got those who work in factories in foreign countries, labor slaves. So it is still going on. If you want to play the game of slavery just went one way, it doesn't work that way. Because if you want reparations, you might want to ask those African nations about giving out reparations for all the people they sold. And you know what they'll tell you? Fuck off. We're not playing that game.
Yep. Amen to that.
And I'll say, Kamala, if you want to go that route, please go that route. First reparations come from your ass, because your great-great-grandfather bought 80 Irish slaves for your plantation down there in Jamaica. So let's start with your ass.
Right? I mean, yeah. Oh, you make some really good points there, Rex, and I have to agree. I think this is I'm sorry. Were you done?
I'm done. Yep.
Okay. I have to say, this is a strong right by Randy. And while I do acknowledge that there are ugly parts of history, and slavery of any form is ugly, even as you mentioned, the current slavery, like human trafficking, just absolutely appalling. But still, as both you and Randy point out, this is about going to an extreme. The extreme of where you want to erase history. I was actually reading, and you probably already know about this, but they're actually, the Pentagon is changing the names of 9 Army bases and other military assets that honor Confederate officers. You know, now, I get that when it comes to the South, there is some history that is ugly, but there's this ugly history everywhere. And just because you don't like a history, you know, doesn't mean you can change it. And I feel like, it doesn't affect me really one way or another if they change the name of Army bases, but to me, it's like just another move in trying to cover up the history of the United States, and particularly the southern part of the United States, which has a very deep, very rich history to it. But, you know, I like that Randy starts out with, beware, the extreme left is now on the move, demanding things that only they will approve, and their stock in trade is to rewrite history to suit their needs and create vague mystery. This is so true. So many of the things, the extreme things that you'll see are a reflection of, you know, the Nazi regime, of the Nazi Reich. I mean, you know, one of the first things that Hitler did was convince everybody that he was going to keep them safe by them giving up their rights to own guns. But, of course, it wasn't worded that way. I really also like that this is a nod to Karl Marx and how he saw how easily people are controlled. There's a great bite all the way through in this, but particularly in those lines, Karl Marx knew that deception is worth gold. People without history are easily controlled. Most effective when started early in schools, aided by the fact that parents are lazy or just fools. You know, you have to be able to and be willing to step in and teach your children what the school system refuses to. So powerful, right, and very well done.
Well, they're doing that as we speak. You know, they're editing Roald Dahl, Dr. Seuss, Agatha Christie, for language that they fear.
Yep. Yep. Oh, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It is.
Right.
It is very sad. But, all right. You know what I keep forgetting to do? I keep getting so distracted, like, just listening and you know, appreciating the poetry that I forget to go grab the next one. But let me go ahead and do that. All right. And here we go. Do, 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 do. All right. Up next, we have Reasonable Injustice by Julie Buck. And, oh, so I see Hat. She says, I cannot listen. Going to meeting soon. Just saying hello. And
Hat,
hello.
Put in one earplug.
And there you go. There you go. Yeah, there you go. Anyways, up next we have Reasonable Injustice by Julie Buck. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Reasonable Injustice by Julie Buck. Ow, I want to wail. I want to lyrically moan and scream till my throat is both fire and brimstone. Reasonable injustice builds in me like a socialist paying taxes, and I take my verbal axes and chop away at the sewage which has become this world. We no longer live, but are told how to do so and for who. That doesn't bother you? Even in exile, I am who I be. Here I can think without someone stealing my free. I am emptiness with vision. I must experience everything in its entirety, as the colors are just too many. It is true. It is true. I want to taste all and then let the blues stay blue. Shit. These poor damn men. End poem. All right. What do you got?
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. When I saw that earlier today and I saw the howl at the beginning, I was like, oh, Rex is definitely reading this one. Because whenever I try to howl, I just sound like a dying cow. So, you know, great job there. And I really like this one because it, especially with that beginning howl and the lines in the beginning of, you know, first of all, the owl and I want to wail, I want to lyrically moan and scream till my throat is both fire and brimstone. It feels kind of like the whole vibe of Ginsberg's howl and looking at current times and looking at the injustices. And I like how this has that tone of, does anybody else see the bullshit that I am seeing, you know? And I like that this is a person who really wants to get away from the sewage, get away from the bullshit, you know, and you know, just really get out there and find that sense of freedom. I particularly like, we no longer live but are told how to do so and for who. That doesn't bother you? Even in exile, I am who I be. Here I can think without someone stealing my free. I am emptiness with vision. I must experience everything in its entirety. As the colors are just too many, it is true, it is true. I want to taste all and then let the blue stay blue. Shit, those poor damn men. I think that's just a spot on ending and really speaks on the idea of people who have a narrow sense of vision and a narrow sense of what true freedom actually is. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Well said, yeah. Well, that's what Marxism, socialism, communism, it's all about. It's all about control. If you don't have control, then you have problem with the people. And that puts fear into those who sit up top. And they don't like fear. They want to be the ones fully gathered in the moment with that that notion to what I say is what is and be damned everyone else. And you don't get that where you've got too many free people thinking freely. I mean, you look at the Great Purges. You look at what Stalin, Lenin, Mao, Pol Pot, Milosevic, Slobodan, Castro, Guevara, Perón, you name it, across the world, who had communism running their government. The first thing they did, the purges, were university professors and their political opposites. Those are the first ones to go, right to the prisons. Why? Because you don't want free thinkers who teach, and you don't want the free thinkers on the opposite side of what you're trying to bring about. They disappear right into the whatever hellhole they've got sitting out somewhere in God knows where. And she hits it right there. We no longer live, but are told how to do so. You've got the WHO is offered, World Health Organization. Hey, you need to eat crickets. You need to eat grass. While they dine on duck à la roche, filet mignon, and everything else in their well-guarded with a few hundred army people surrounding them to protect them from the likes of us, it doesn't work. And so I am emptiness with vision. I must explain. I like that, the idea of, if to bring yourself to that point of being able to offer up something, you need to have those moments of clarity where you experience everything you possibly can to offer up the notion of where you're going, where you might go next, what it is that you wish to put forth. I want to taste it all and then let the blue stay blue. Yes. I don't need to be told the sky is black just because you think it's black while it's blue. I don't need to be told what this word means. I already know what that word means. I don't need it to fit into your narrative and ideology because you want to change everything. Sorry. It doesn't work that way. If you want that much control and your own communist beatific entity, buy up an island somewhere. Make that your playground. And you can do it to yourselves, but the sad thing is, that's not good enough. They need largesse. They need expanse. And they need to be able to fiddle with everything, steal what they can, burn everything else to the ground. All right. What we got next?
All right. Next, we have When Depression Came Down on the Farm, by Richard Wiseman. And Richard was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So here we go.
When Depression Came Down on the Farm, by Richard Wiseman. The problem was overproduction, underconsumption, and desperation rose like a fever under tear-gassed, freezing waters while a riot ensues. Anna, Anna, they got me, shot in the back, deadly. We funeral marched, a cry for Hep from Miller's Row. It was bright of hope, the end to law and order as corn fell to a penny. Robbing a bank for po' folks to feed 'em Christmas dinners, when the tenant farmer must eat, there is no crime. With cotton bid a nickel, for low prices, with interest on borrowed monies, as the land values crashed, then drought swept through the heart's land, crop destruction led to dust bowl blindness. Head-shaken denial of nitrogen-starved Great Plain facts, cooking the dog's head for her children to starve upon, sin they ain't et in 3 days full. Demand for food as the banker's digestive system collapsed. Foreclosure with sale of farmers' land to increase their pretty boy bank robberies. Tearing up mortgages, baby face, giving fives and tens to farmers as the war vets seek out 45 caliber bonus, no trickle down here. Living midst houses without walls, constructing bridges to nowhere to now here. Bankers tarred then feathered, a modern aged stoning. It could begin here. 17 in Moscow or Pittsburgh classed war. No life in a tinnish hovel. Death marching to bared feet against scorched pavements. The Corn Belt siege of Washington. Death crossed at Pennsylvania Avenue as members of Congress escaped through underground tunnels. Surreal. Make a right on Raoul, left on Father John. End of poem.
Great read, Richard. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It was very much appreciated. All right, Pam, what do you think?
I like this one. Of course, I'm always impressed by Richard's writing. He messaged me and asked me if I would like a pre-write that fit with the Karl Marx topic, and I said yes, because you know I always enjoy and appreciate Richard's poetry, and I thought this was a great look at history and how we don't always get to see the full picture. I really like his use of dialect. There's a very upright in how he brings us into the moment. I found his AN really fascinating, where he says, during the Great Depression, bank robbers like Pretty Boy Floyd and Babyface Nelson tore up farm mortgages and gave some of their loot to poor tenant farmers. You know, you really don't read too much about stuff like that. And I thought that was extremely fascinating. You know, and I really like how it speaks on the idea that history will be seen differently from the eyes of a poor working farmer than from, you know, say like a rich banking investor. You know, strong imagery and metaphors throughout this. I really like Babyface giving fives and tens to farmers as the war vets seek out 45 calibrated bonus, no trickle down here, living missed houses without walls, constructing bridges to nowhere, to now here, bankers tarred, then feathered, a modern age stoning, it could begin there here, 17 in Moscow or Pittsburgh, classical war, no life in a tinnish hovel. It speaks on the idea that throughout history, fingers have been pointed at various people in order to distract attention from who the true thieves really are. So excellent write all the way through and very well done. I'm glad Richard shared it with us.
Yep. There's a lot of bite in here that most people don't know about. The talk with Babyface and those guys are offering up, robbing banks and giving money to the poor folks because they didn't have food to eat was a touch of truth because those guys actually came from the poor farmlands out there when the Depression and then the drought. The Midwest was a dust bowl back then too because plus the tornadoes, it was sent something a couple of cubic miles of good earth was ripped away because of all the dust storms and no relief and rain that went out that way. Plus the thought of not having a nitrogen to rejuvenate the soil just washed all that away with the windstorms they had. And well, it was a nice fight. 17 in Moscow or Petersburg class war. You know what the funny thing about that was? The 1917, what they call the 1917 revolution in November, it didn't happen in November. That was a muck-up because the women had already got out earlier that year. I think it was in February or March. They were all over Petersburg, Moscow, protesting for the lack of food because of a cruel bitter winter, and they were demanding change. Nicholas had stepped down earlier that year. Lenin was still in hiding in Europe at that time. So they needed their big push at the end of the year in November for their revolution to take hold. And then we offer the people. Hell, the people already taken the country back. It was theirs. He abdicated in early that year. So that was a different tone. The thought to war vets seek out 45 calibers, I understand that too. Back then, there were tent cities around the White House because all those vets had not been paid their bonuses from World War One all those years later. So they were living outside the White House demanding their money. And the funny thing else that's never mentioned is there were a bunch of people, high-placed, rich, as well as well-motivated to do this, they were going to take over the government in 1932. They had elicited a general who was well-loved by the armies that were placed around the White House. It was something like a couple of 100,000 people demanding, and he had the love of about 1 million men. So they were planning on taking over by insurrection in 1932. And unfortunately, well, it didn't happen, but unfortunately, what's-his-face, cowtoad. He said, you're going to back my new deal in order for you to keep your businesses. I think he should have gone out and taken the heads of everyone who was involved, brought in their counterparts, their seconds, so to speak, tried, convicted, shot all of those who engaged in that insurrection, then told their seconds to go back. Now, you do what you're supposed to do and understand, you might be next.
Wow. History is full of just some crazy and fascinating stuff. So, very cool there, Rex.
Yep.
Very insightful comment.
All right. What we got next?
All right. Well, up next we have... The Burden of the Backs by Just Elliot Six. In the words of Marx, we find the truth, a call to action, a righteous proof that the rich will do anything for show, but in reality they refuse to let go. They'll throw us a bone, a crumb or two, but true justice they'll never pursue. For they thrive on our sweat and toil, their profit built on the labor's soil. They'll talk of charity and goodwill, but it's just a guise, a sleight of skill, to hide their greed and their lust for power, their hearts as black as the midnight hour. Yet we rise up, a force to be reckoned, our spirits unbroken, our will unshaken, for we know that justice will be served, and our voices will not be unheard. So let us join together, hand in hand, and build a world that's just and grand, where the rich cannot oppress and exploit, and the poor will have their rightful joy. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Well, that's a little bit of a utopia that cannot, will not exist, because each and every venue has its own thoughts, its own realm, its own idea of who and what they are. And some stay. Like I said before, you've still got slavery going on today. That's the way things work. If you don't tackle it, it's your own fault for letting it go on. How rich is too rich is one angle. Do you take money from those who've actually built something with their own sweat to begin with? They're the ones who have paid for everything going up, paid for the thought of, I have to work to make this, I have to work hard to actually make sure this actually materializes and works. Yet, the idea of taking a company and nationalizing it for the people who never actually did anything to actually put that company together in the first place, except have the right to work with that company or elsewhere. The burden of backs is a matter of, where do you go? What do you want to do? And still, things don't work by themselves. They don't materialize. They have to be thought out. They have to be constructed. So the idea of what happens when somebody puts something together, it doesn't work as a notation to, oh, snap your fingers, it's done. You need people to put, you need skilled people to lay the foundation, put up the walls, put in the plumbing, put in electricity, then hang all the fixtures, do up the inside, then you've got the flooring, the glassware. Everything works around how you are within a particular field. Hey, if you're an electrician, you're working down south, you don't, not an electrician, an HVAC system operator, you are always going to be paid well because your services are needed. We're forgetting about the fact that if you take away, then who gets the services? Will they get paid? Will they be paid what they're worth? No. They'll be paid what they think you're worth. And that's the obvious fallacy that walks within this, because, hey, free market determines what people get paid. And there's always that note, hey, if you come out of high school and the only job you can get right then at the moment is a McDonald's at $7-$8 an hour, there's a learning curve there, because you don't want to spend time in that unless you actually want to get up in that. So you're looking to learn more, to get out of that and into something better, and then again into something better from there.
That is very true. That is very true. Well said there, Rex.
Well, you're going to comment since you read it?
Oh, shoot. You know what? I thought your comment counted for both of us. To be honest, I totally blanked out that I hadn't commented. So I do apologize because I was commenting in my head. But I thought this was a great rhyming poem. I like what you had to say. I like that this speaks on the idea of people who put on showmanship, who try to act like they have other people's best interest in mind, but really don't. You know, great rhyme and flow, strong imagery, strong lines. I really particularly was drawn to where it says, they'll throw us a bone, a crumb or two, but true justice they'll never pursue. For they thrive on our sweat and toil. Their profits build on the laborer's soil. And, you know, I like what you had to say about where, you know, they'll pay you what they think you're worth. You know, life isn't all about people who run the business. It's about people who do the actual labor for the business. I also really like where he says they'll talk of charity and goodwill, but it's just a guise, a sleight of skill to hide their greed and their lust for power, their hearts as black as the midnight hour. Wonderful imagery there. And I like that this speaks on the idea of standing up for yourself, of knowing your own self-worth. The ending line makes me think about how, you know, about how it says in the Constitution that everyone has the right to pursue happiness. Not necessarily that you will find it, but that you have that right to be able to pursue it. So really a great write by Eliot and very well done.
Well, that kind of hits on that notion, too. You go out west, you go to a Starbucks, you want a cup of coffee? Okay, if you can afford it. Because you know what? I'm not going into a place to buy a cup of coffee where I'm being served someone, a barista, who's getting $15 an hour for doing coffee.
Uh-huh.
And they don't have to do anything. That's a little thought of laziness. Which, hey, I'm worth $15. What the hell you are? I work in food and beverage. Fact is, $15 an hour, so you better be a damn fine cook and be able to out a shitload of work perfect every single time for that kind of money. That's how business works. $15 an hour?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Watch. Look at now with McDonald's. Hey, if you want to go to McDonald's now, you better be prepared to spend $10-15 for just the meal for yourself, let alone for the rest of the people you take with you.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's ridiculous. It's really absolutely ridiculous. You used to be able to feed a family really cheap at McDonald's. You can't even feed one person. Like, it's not worth it. I go to Quick Trip. You know, plus with McDonald's, Jesus, they're always, sorry, no offense to McDonald's, but they're always getting my order wrong. So, yeah. Not
That's
worth it.
That's because they've lost their value. They've lost their notation of what they're actually worth. Because the people think, you go in there, you do it being a fry cook or a plain burger cook at McDonald's, that's cheap, low end. That does not deserve a $15 an hour employee. That's why pretty soon you'll find all of those, you won't find a cashier in there. You'll be logging into a machine for your order. And a manager will then deliver your order. You'll find everything get automated to the point where, hey, there's no more of those jobs to be had. Why? Because it's cheaper to have the bloody machines. Why? Because you get a 10-year window where you can take so much off every year on your taxes because you've purchased these machines. You've got that window of opportunity where everything depletes, and it's good for your bottom line. And that's you talk about greed. That's not really greed. That's smart. Why do you need a bunch of bubbling little twiddly farts demanding more money, and they can't even really cook to begin with? They don't really give a shit about what they're doing, and they certainly don't care about the customers. So forgotten. People have forgotten what service industry actually means. Service. It means you give a service. If you're not willing to do that, then you're in the wrong fucking industry. So, All right.
Well, up next we have Carthage by Dark Knight of the Soul. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
Carthage by Dark Knight of the Soul. I woke up one morning from dead calm of sleep, dreaming of Carthage. I saw my home and view of the harbor where my father fished from the sea, and I etched it into my mind like a carver of stone, refusing to forget. I ate their gruel while dreaming of Carthaginian figs and dates. Bursting in sun-ripened sweetness, I dreamt of food that once was mine, refusing to forget. I hated Roman faces, calling some friends, even though now a Roman face was mine. I wore Roman clothes. I fought Roman wars, a slave by any other name. My name is Hamilcar, like many great men before me, but they call me by Roman names, and I swallow their poison lines, but spit them out when no one sees. My people are gone, they told me. Carthage burned beyond repair. Few people to survive, no culture left to share. A Carthaginian peace, they called it, and they shattered us, then our history. I am Hamilcar of Carthage. My culture will die with me. I am reborn, a slave to Rome, but I refuse to forget. And poem.
Great read, Rex. I really like the way that Doug took this. You know, he, as he says in his AN, you know, repressing, erasing history has happened often. I chose Carthage because it was fully destroyed, burned to the ground by Rome. And Carthage was one of the biggest powers of its day. I like the attention to detail that he went into, even choosing a name of Latin origin that was the name of, it was a commonly used name in ancient Carthage, and Hamilcar, which I thought was really cool. I like that he delves into ancient history and reminds us what it must have been like to be living at the precipice of a time period when you saw your history erased, you know, when you saw everything falling down around you. A wonderful story, right? Great first-person narrative. I think this stands well on its own, and yet at the same time, I can't help but want more. You know, I want to read more about Hamilcar, the slave, who was once a great man, and you know, and once had this wonderful life and this history, deep, rich history that just fell apart. You know, and was you know, taken over, and I like what Gary Rubin had to say in his comment, which is the victors write the history books, often cleansing them as best they can from the truth. Look no further than how the West was won. I think that's a really good comment that Gary has made there on the idea that yes, you know, oftentimes history is rewritten by the victors. I like the emotion that Dark Mind of the Soul puts into this. I hated Roman faces, calling some friends, even though now a Roman face was mine. I wore Roman clothes. I fought Roman wars, a slave by any other name. And so there's not only the fact that the city itself was destroyed, but that people's identity were being erased. So great write and very well done.
Nice. Thank you. And yes, this does, in that note of that, which is, I mean, Carthage was a powerhouse, and Hamilcar was the father of Hannibal. Hamilcar rolled into the fort in the first, near the end of the First Punic Wars, and then his son Hannibal led the Second Punic Wars, which almost brought Rome to its knees. So there is a lot of history within this, and the fact, yeah, Carthage was actually razed. It was burned and razed. There wasn't a damn thing left of it when Rome got their dander up to the point of saying, to hell with this, enough, unfortunately. And Carthage was a great powerhouse, and I do believe they were also a pretty good seafarers as well. And Rome did take a lot of people all over the place. If you went into the ranks of legions, you paid your dues. It was hard life. You did everything you were supposed to do on that note. And Hamilcar himself was an elder statesman and a general, commander of the armies of Carthage. Way back when, it's got to be, what, 250, 240 BC, somewhere in there. So nicely done there. What was that? That was, Dark Knight. I'm sorry.
Yep, Dark Knight of the Soul.
That was a different look coming off the other side of it.
Yeah, I liked that. I like when people take a different approach. It's actually, we have another rite coming up on that same prompt, and all three of them have taken different approaches to the same prompt. So it's very cool to see, you know, so I like that. I like that. And speaking of which, I'm going to go ahead and put up the next poem, and which is actually inspired by the same prompt. This is Field of Dreams by Cedar Chapman. And it goes like this. As a dark dawn rises, silence erupts from the soil below. Ash falls from the sky like black dahlia petals. Unheard, headless tombstones inscribe their voices into the earth, left to desiccate their fetal skeletons, coil beneath lush emerald meadows, each frozen child yowling for their mothers who wander in purgatory, grappling their lactating bosom, searching for their babies. Even after 10,000 suns have cast shadows over their graves, the wolf has been flayed, his howl muted in the face of a full blood moon. Buffaloes that once trembled the ground stampede no more, their trail of dust settled on history books, each carcass stuck on a page, rotting in deep ravines without having to spend a silver shilling on lead mini balls. The smell of gunpowder is embalmed in the spring breeze. Horses long dead whinny with rustling wheat panicles. Foundling spirits weep, brushing golden fields with their rippling memories, lassoed and assimilated, sitting single file in square boxes made of shiplap and cedar shingles. The mighty brown bear hibernates beneath the calm pastures, his musqueam songs replaced by English slur and whiskey breath, naked skin donned with turquoise blue, smeared by bales of linen school uniforms, preachers and nuns count rosary beads, one for each drunken stupor lying in a forest of telephone poles floating on a back alley asphalt river where salmon do not swim, only the stench of fish on a humid summer day. Stars twinkle above the forgotten schoolyard, beating its war drum in the midnight sky, hoping one day a warrior will wake, raise his tomahawk and bow, to roam barefoot on grassy plains, to soar up high in the clouds with the ravens and eagles, now left as stories untold and poem.
Ooh, ooh, great read. Boy, this is an even darker piece. This one's the literality in this, as it walks on the idea of this is Canada's darkest nightmare come to life and still being dug up even today. The fact that resident schools going back almost 100 years and all the bodies that they're now finding on the property of those resident schools, and the fact that they haven't hit them all, they're only hitting a few so far, and they're finding mass graves, they're finding bodies of children, and these resident schools were for not just, well, that they did shelter mostly indigenous, but it was also for those who were orphaned, those that were that came to the state as pretty much nobody's at the moment. They went to these schools. So this does, but this does walk quite a bit in the indigenous peoples, because I think that's where most of the bodies are coming up with, indigenous peoples as well as other ones. And some terrible shit went on with these schools. And it's going to be a nice, well, not a nice one, it's going to be a very, very dark stain, that one they can't actually defend. So, Sita, something a little different from you, too. Damn. I do like that note up top, that thought with the black dahlia petals. Boy, that rolls right well into Unheard Headless Tombstones, because that note to how the dahlia was offered up as a perfect two-piece bisection and then staged. This is dark, and it's honest. It's politically charged, I know that, but you know what? It has its story that needs to be told. All right, Kim, what about you?
You know what? I absolutely agree. This is a hard truth. A story that needs to be told. It is such a sad thing that thousands, tens of thousands of children were taken away from their families in order to be integrated into a white society. So, you know, and it's, you know, the fact that this truth is coming to light, I think is an amazing thing that it is, and I'm glad that Cedar chose to write about this. It is a particularly dark time in Canada's history that, as you were mentioning, is still being uncovered. And the true sadness is not only the deaths, but deaths of children who died thinking that who they were, you know, who God made them wasn't good enough, that their culture wasn't good enough, that their culture wasn't beautiful enough. And it's so just, it really honestly brings tears to my eyes. This is a powerful, powerful write by Cedar Chapman. Strong imagery and metaphors, a great emotive look at a people's identity being slowly stolen away. Thankfully, though, there are still those who know the Native American history, and through, you know, writing and word of mouth and, you know, just the teachings, you know, just still we are able to keep a part of that history. But the ugliness within this, and I really particularly like the smell of gunpowder's embalmed in the spring breeze, horses long dead, whinny with rustling wheat panicles. And I like the ending, too, where he says, stars twinkle above the forgotten schoolyard, beating its war drum in the midnight sky, hoping one day a warrior will wake. And I like that. I like that. The idea that someday someone will wake up and speak up for the injustices that have happened throughout history. A wonderful rite and very well done.
Not as long as you've got the likes of Trudeau walking around thinking he's better than everybody else. And
oh,
I did
absolutely
like the title, Fear the Game, for the reference in that is poignant and double-edged, because it hits on that. You thought of you think of the movie, if you build it, they will come. And then that idea, if you build the schools, they will come. Field of Dreams, oh. But the Field of Dreams is actually quite the hidden mask, because the school records were so shitty in who they had there that they can't actually account for how many kids actually died. But they know it's probably around at least 6,000 and probably a whole lot more than that.
I watched a video one time. They had a similar thing that happened in Australia where they were taking the indigenous Australian children, and I can't remember what time period this was, but they were taking them from their parents and putting them in schools, and claiming, telling them that they were orphans. And it was an interview with this one woman and how her and her sister got put in one of these schools, and they kept trying to run away because they knew they weren't orphans, and they kept getting beaten. So this kind of horrifying stuff has happened throughout many places in history, especially, it seems, when it comes to the indigenous people. So very sad. But great show tonight, Lex.
Yep, they also sterilized quite a few of them, too. Hey, we can't have another generation of stupids. People who were, the thoughts back then were strange, oddball, the ease of murdering children. Just like Germany from the 60s through, no, 50s through the, to almost 2000. Oh, yes, the German state freely gave orphan children to pedophiles, the same ones over and over and over again, 50 bloody years.
Yep. Just another way to gain mass control. It's very sad. That is for sure.
All right. I guess we're going to close out this evening. Got some hellacious rites that had me babbling. Thank you, gang. Great rites. And thank you, Pam. And Jen, and hats for the board. And we'll do this again next Tuesday when we come to bring some more. Good night, everybody.